Good day, listeners. Jonathan Daugherty here with another edition of the Pure Sex Radio program. You know, we're a listener-supported outreach of Be Broken Ministries, and we exist to help individuals and families move from sexual brokenness to wholeness in Christ and equip others to do the same. In this episode, I welcome back Lachelle Burkett, an expert in helping women heal from betrayal trauma, especially in marriages affected by infidelity. Lachelle shares her personal journey and emphasizes the importance of community, safety, and communication in the healing process. We discuss the unique emotional challenges that women face after betrayal and the critical role of support and understanding from both partners and their community. Lachelle also highlights the spiritual aspect of healing, stressing how Christ provides hope and safety during suffering and grief. It's a heartfelt conversation aimed at offering solace and guidance to those traveling this difficult path. To learn more about Lachelle and her resources for wives, visit hoperedefined.org. For additional resources, visit bebroken.org or check out the links that we're going to put in today's show notes. And of course, friends, we would love it if you would rate and review the podcast after listening, because this helps others find it who are searching for this content. Now, let's get into today's conversation with Lachelle. Well, all right. We have Lachelle Burkett back with us. How are you doing?
I'm doing really well. Thanks, Jonathan.
Yeah. So, you know, we've had you on before. Believe it or not, the last time we had you on was 2020. So it was the last interview that we had with you aired like right after the whole blow up of COVID and everything. We had you on at that point in time to talk about sexual betrayal and spiritual battle. And then a little bit after that, we had you and your husband on to kind of share your story and your recovery story, which was awesome. And so I wanted to have you back to really talk about an issue related to women who are healing from betrayal trauma and being able to understand and address the needs that they have as part of that healing journey. But before we get to that, I want to ask just kind of a very high level question that I didn't talk to you beforehand about, and I'm just going to spring it on you because I just love doing that sometimes to guests like you, Lachelle. Why do you do the work that you do with hurting wives?
Well, that wasn't as challenging of a question as I expected. So
I didn't say it was going to be challenging.
So glad.
I just said I didn't tell you what it was.
I was starting to sweat. But to answer that question, I do it because it's a part of my own story. The betrayal is a part of my own story, but I do it even more, probably two other reasons. One, I do it because the Lord asked me to, which I know sounds like kind of a cliche spiritual answer, but truly the Lord asked me to do this because I fought it for a long time, saying, I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that kind of hard work. We're not fixed. We're not perfect. There was a lot of things that I would use as reasons not to do this work. But I also think that the other thing that drives the work that I do and the reason I get up every day to do this is because I needed the community. So I oftentimes joke that there is a selfish motive behind all of this. I needed other women to walk with me, to help hold me up when I couldn't stand up on my own, or to remind me that there is still good, even in the midst of the dark. Mm. And that's why I do what I do. So we build, that's the passion that we have for Hope Redefined, is to create a community for women to heal together. Mm. So,
you know, I love that. And I have a similar response in my own work that I do. I often will tell people, I said, God knew that I would need the help that we're providing more than anybody that we're providing it to. So he said, just do this full time. So in some ways it was kind of like, I'll be the first to raise my hand and say, I need these reminders every single day of my life. And so God just decided to call me into this vocation so that I would get those reminders every single day.
Yes.
But I also love what you said about community. And I think we're probably going to talk about that even more as we get into this idea of needs that pop up in betrayal trauma healing. But what is it that's so vital about community in healing in general, but also specifically for wives who are dealing with betrayal trauma?
So I think the first thing I'll tell you is what I notice for most women that I get to walk with is community is one of the first things that feels like it disintegrates in front of them. The vulnerability that comes with this story that we are unpacking oftentimes moves women into a place of silence and isolation. I remember speaking to a husband one time. He had reached out on behalf of his wife, which doesn't happen often, but in this particular case it did. And he said, well, I just assumed she was telling her mom and her sister and her best friend about what was going on. But what I'm coming to understand is that she's actually not telling anybody. And I said, that's a really common experience for a lot of women. There's a lot of shame attached to this. There's confusion. There's fear of people's opinions. And so it's risky. It feels really risky to step out and seek out community, especially community with strangers. If your closest people don't get it, how are strangers going to get it? But the beautiful thing about the way God made us as humans is that we are not made to walk alone, right? And community is such a strategic part of our healing and our growth, that is where I see women they're revived in how they're going to step into the world. Just yesterday we had a group meeting and I had asked the gals, I think the question was like, you know, why is community, why is being in your group a part of your self-care plan? And one of the women said, because I've suddenly discovered who I was meant to be. Now, that is such a strong and profound statement for someone who's sitting in a betrayal trauma group, healing from impacts of another person's choices. But for her, there was so much disconnect between who she thought she was and who she really is. And it took this particular rupture in her life to really surrender things that maybe before felt like they were so, so important. And now she feels like she's walking in a sense of freedom and wholeness. It's incredible. But you don't often get a permission to do that when you don't have others around you.
Yeah. I'm a huge believer in this, in the idea that we can't actually come to understand who we are in isolation. We right. need those reflective voices, the people that can really get to know us in a way that then through their lens, they can actually show us more that we can't see ourselves. Because if I just sit staring in a mirror, so to speak, metaphorically or even literally, there's only so much that I can see.
Yeah.
And to bring in people and to be a safe enough place where now all of your brokenness can come out and you start hearing these reflective voices and these people that care and these people that say, but I see this in you, Lachelle. And you know what? Actually, when you said that, I had that part in my story. Can I tell you that? And then as all of those connection points come together, you do start to get a bigger and clearer picture of, oh, I understand not only my brokenness, but I understand who I'm meant to be. And I love that. So let's talk about, when wives come into this realization, we can call it discovery, disclosure, whatever, the realities that they have been betrayed by the one that they trust the most, their husband. And that trust has been broken and just their lives are shattered. And let's say they begin that healing journey. Can we talk about the needs that are present along that journey? Like, what are they? What are the core needs that a wife needs when she is starting to travel this road of betrayal trauma healing?
Yeah, I'm so glad we get to talk about this particular subject, because whenever I do an intro call or I meet a partner, and we refer to them as partners, betrayed wives as partners, whenever I get to meet one for the first time, I typically will ask them that question, what do you think you need right now? And 9 times out of 10, what I'm doing is setting her up, because typically her answer is, I have no idea. Mm-hmm. And I go, yeah, I know. Like, it is such a vague place for us to really try to get some concrete, something that feels real for us. So when I ask a partner, what does she need? We don't oftentimes know. I know that though, from doing the work that I've been doing for as long as I have, and then also through my training and certifications with APSATS, that the first need that most partners have, but they don't have the language for, is safety and stabilization. They're desperate to seek safety. And with that safety comes the feeling of being stable. Everything feels like their foundation has been rocked. I think about that. What is that toy your kids used to get on when it had a ball in the middle and a plank of wood around it and a wobble or something like that? Like, that's really a true experience for a lot of women, is trying to figure out, where do I land here? And oftentimes safety, well, the truth is that safety is a really diverse thing for a lot, for all of us. What I may view as safe for myself is not going to be the same that feels safe for you, Jonathan. And so part of what I would tell you a woman needs in that early stage is the community, like we just talked about, which is going to give her some space to brainstorm and hear how other women found safety. And so it's not necessarily that she's going to copy, but what she does get the chance to do is go, yeah, that doesn't sound safe to me, but you know what does sound safe to me? And she'll pop into something different, but it allows her to start considering things that would feel safe. So tangibly, what that looks like is some women, depending on their story, what they might need in that initial season is, I need space away from him. I don't feel safe being around him, or I need physical boundaries in the home. I need to abstain from sexual intimacy with this person for a period of time. I need to go be with other people. I need to get into a group. I've had partners who have a financial need. They need to get, because their story may involve some financial betrayal, so they need a checking account that is just theirs. And while we're not necessarily advocating for this complete detachment, there is such a gift in being able to help an individual who is navigating betrayal have a voice. And she has the ability to say, this is what I need from other people in order for me to feel safe again.
Yeah. Now, on the safety issue, so I'm thinking about this from multiple angles. Obviously, here you're talking about, okay, how do you just help the partner to be able to determine, what are my core safety needs right now, physically, emotionally, spiritually, psychologically, all these kinds of things, financially, you even mentioned. I'm thinking about this also then from the betraying partner side. And maybe if we're talking about a marriage where, hey, we're leaving the door open to hope here that this marriage can be restored, and the other partner is working on their behaviors and addiction or whatever. What does it look like for that person and other people around this hurting partner to help her to establish some of that safety? Because here's the thing I can see. One, from the betraying partner's side, is like, this is confusing, because sometimes he's going, man, I've gotten into a group, I'm seeing a counselor, I'm doing the work, you know, kind of a thing. And he doesn't realize the time frame and the emotional trauma and all that kind of stuff. But sometimes you can have, even like you mentioned, hey, we can have well-meaning family members or maybe even friends that do not understand really what's going on here. So how can those folks sort of come around to understand how important this core element of safety is, and that it's not just somebody sort of quote unquote flipping out and come on, get it together and you're going to be fine.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess I'd even add to that, or just give it time. It'll get better. Like, time heals all wounds, right? That kind of cliche that oftentimes comes up for us. And sometimes we put it on ourselves and sometimes others say it. But so I think that one of the number one things that I hear partners say that they need from their spouse, well, there's probably two or three, but the top would be communication. because what they've experienced to this point is probably minimal communication. And so it's one thing to say, I've gone to group and I went to group and group was good. But that's not very, that's not communicating with your partner, with your wife about what group was like. And so this is one of those conversations I love having with guys who have betrayed their wives. It's like, the question is always, well, like, what does she want from me? And I'm like, she wants to hear that there's something happening for you. It's not about the other people in the group. She doesn't care about their stories. Probably doesn't even, may or may not even ask. She may ask questions about other people in the group, because part of what she's trying to figure out is, are those healthy people who are helping you get healthy? Right. So she's like sussing it out. But on the other side of it, most of the time, what partners are looking for is a sense of some form of communication that comes back to her that says, this is what I'm learning about myself. Because a part of what I think in our brains we link to is that surely to goodness, if he understood what he was doing, he would never have done this or would not continue to do it. So she's looking to see if he's growing in his own understanding. And so when you have a guy who says, you know, this was kind of an ongoing, we could laugh about it now, but it was horrible in the early days where my husband would go to group and I'd be like, how was group? And he's like, good. And I was like, well, like, what did you guys talk about? And he's like, I mean, I can't really tell you. It's all confidential. And what that began to do was it moved me into a place of paranoia and hypervigilance. At first it was like, oh, okay, maybe I shouldn't ask. And then it got to a point of being like, are you even going?
Right.
Like, are you just gaslighting me again? Cause you're not even telling me what's happening. Like, this feels really shady. And then it moved and it morphed into me doing things that were so out of character. I think I might have even shared this on the first podcast, like driving past the church to try and see if his car was there. And I know now what I was doing is in that what others would perceive as crazy behaviors, I was trying to seek safety. Mm-hmm. I was looking for, is he doing what he says he's doing? Is he communicating with me? Is he this? But when he wouldn't give me that information, I'll go find it myself.
Yeah. So let's talk about where, so in this issue of safety, where does one go to really find this? Because I can imagine a little bit of what you're talking about right now in terms of, hey, watching this betraying partner's behavior to see if they're doing something. There's a sense in which that partner might be looking to them and saying, well, if you're doing your recovery and if you're doing things, then I'll feel safe. But what if that's not happening? Can there still be safety? Like, where is the ultimate? And I know this is kind of a leading question, but where is the ultimate source of safety found for a woman in this journey?
Right. The answer is Jesus.
Yes.
We do get there. And I think I'll just share my own personal connection and realization to this. And it really is the root of where the name of our organization came from, was Hope Redefined. So that's the name of the ministry. And it came from me seeking hope. And I spent an excessive amount of time throughout this journey looking for hope in a lot of places. I wanted to know about the group because I was pretty convinced that the group was going to fix him. And then when I didn't feel like I got clarity around the group, or maybe he started not going to group as often, or there was even seasons where everybody in the group was, he would come home and talk about how everybody in the group was dumb and nobody knows what they're talking about, blah, blah, blah. Right. So he's dismissing that support system that I'm looking at as like the lifeline, and I would panic. So then it was like, oh, well, it's because we don't have an accountability partner. So then he gets an accountability partner, and that's my hope. That hope in that person is going to like rip him out of this pit, right? Accountability partner relapsed 3 months into their relationship. So now the rug has been ripped out from underneath me again, right? And it was one thing after another of me attempting to put my hope in others, because I really did believe that if he got better, I would get better. And that wasn't true. It isn't true. And I had a friend say this really strong statement, and it has stuck with me for so long. She said, Jesus Christ died on the cross for you as an individual. He didn't die for your marriage. So walk like that. And so what I didn't like just wake up one morning and be like, oh, I've got this all figured out. And this epiphany has just really changed me. But what was happening simultaneously with me trying to run after my husband to heal me was the Lord also saying, I'm the one who's got the healing for you. I'm the one that you can hope in. No matter what your husband chooses, you still get to heal.
Mm.
Right. And that was but that didn't come right in the very beginning. And the reason, because, and I see this a lot for a lot of my the partners and friends that I've connected with, is there's still a lot of confusion around where is God in this story? I've had women use phrases like, I was set up, or I'm collateral damage, right? I have one woman who shared a story about she went to the pastor and or leadership in their church, and the leadership, someone on the leadership said, well, maybe God needed to use this to bring your husband's heart back to him. And she walked away from that conversation and she goes, and it's not that I don't want my husband's heart brought back to the Lord, but what about me? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm bleeding out. And so are you telling me that the Lord sacrificed me for the name of my husband? Like, I don't understand how to sort this. And so one of the things I like to talk about when I get to connect with individuals is talking about, it's, we always have to remember when walking with a couple, but is that it is the same experience. It's the same event, different experiences.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They're walking through the same event with a different experience. And this is normal. I mean, if you went and you interviewed people who, I'm going to date myself, which I didn't realize would ever happen, but if you talk to people who were alive during 9/11, you and I, Jonathan, we shared the same event, but I guarantee you we had very different experiences.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so that's part of what we have to continue to take into consideration when thinking about a partner is, while she is navigating and having the same event, which is the rupture, she's experiencing it very differently.
Mm-hmm. So now, safety, obviously a huge need that a wife dealing with sexual betrayal trauma has. What other needs are part of the journey as well?
Well, it really does continue to follow the multidimensional partner trauma model with APSATS. Her needs look like safety and stabilization. Her additional needs are permission to grieve, be angry, and to mourn. And this is a step that most of us would like to skip,
mm-hmm.
right? Nobody is like super pumped about having to grieve their story. And so all of us will try to sidestep it. But being able to sit in community that gives you permission to feel that is actually one of the most kindest things that can happen for you, is letting a woman be sad about her story.
And this, I will say, I want to speak to the betrayers for just a minute, because this is the stage that so many betrayers just blow things up. Because
yes, like the emotions.
Well, not only that, but I see it happen over and over again where men will be like, but I'm in recovery, I'm doing this, and they will still pull everything back to themselves, which is what an addict does, and make it more about them than the reality that this is a natural healing process that is absolutely essential for a person who has essentially had a knife stabbed in their back.
Yeah.
Like, you can't say grief and loss and feeling all of that is not supposed to be part of that journey. Too many husbands will get this idea of like, hey, listen, if I'm checking all the boxes, you, Lachelle, should just be happy, gleeful. All of a sudden, everything's wonderful. And so keep going, but I just wanted to make that comment for the betrayers to go give her space and time for that grief process.
Yeah, I think it's also important to understand, like Jake Porter, I remember seeing an interview or something clip that he did, Dr. Jake Porter, and he talked about how we cannot grieve when we're in the throes of trauma. Like, our body will not actually process all of those emotions. We have to, our body will begin to grieve when we finally find safety. And so when, if you are living in a relationship with perpetual relapses and it feels like the boat, the canoe's getting flipped every 2 months, she is probably not getting to a full depth of grief about her story. And so we see this happen a lot where women are like, well, I think I've grieved. And really, probably what she experienced was some initial shock, like parts of the grief cycle. But to feel like she completed it in any form or fashion doesn't really happen until she finds some sense of safety. So you do see it where he's like, well, I'm like really good right now. Like, why is she so upset? And it's like, because she's finally achieved safety. Mm-hmm. Right. So they, and that's, it's really important to understand that, that it comes later. It doesn't always come right at the beginning.
And I like that, because that's just what you just said is a great way for these men to reframe what's happening.
Yeah.
Can they actually see that when these emotions start coming, the grief starts coming, you're actually in a good place. Like, you're actually in a place where, like you said, she feels safe enough to start that grief process. Now in this stage or in this part of the process, you know, where is it important for a grieving partner to get some of the resources and help that she needs for that?
Yeah. I think it's important for her to get it as soon as she can. And the reason I say that is because oftentimes it's difficult for us to even understand the full impact of our, of the event or the story. So oftentimes I'll have, you know, partners who will be sitting in group and somebody will share impact. One that I can think of that's always been so special and just deep for me was having a woman share about her being a pastor's wife, and her husband lost his ministerial job. And she had this moment of just uncontrollable grief because that was part of her identity, was being a pastor's wife.
Mm-hmm.
And she kind of came to that realization during a group, and many of the group members were able to witness and stand in agreement of her loss, of that being so deep. And it really allowed her to take on the magnitude, like the size of it, because it really was. I mean, she'd been a pastor's wife for 34 years. And now all of a sudden she was not. And she, you know, talked about the different impacts of it and like her experience now, but that the weightiness of that. And, you know, this is why we as a culture, we have funerals and celebrations of life, because we're mm-hmm. bearing witness to your loss. We're saying, I see your loss. And in betrayal, we don't get that very often. We don't have people witnessing our loss. We don't have people walking in and going, I see you. And what you have lost was so special. And you should be sad about this.
Yeah, that's good. Now, you talked about safety and grieving. I would imagine that kind of a thread that goes through all of this in terms of just a need is what does healthy self-care look like and all the various maybe layers of that? Because, you know, sometimes I've seen it where a partner can get so sort of tunnel visioned into the emotional grief that they stop eating or they're not sleeping or they're not just very, very basic elements of self-care. How important is that, that those sort of basic human needs get met while all of the emotion and stuff is stirring?
Yeah, I think, I mean, it's important, right? Our bodies don't function well without being fueled appropriately. And, you know, you even have partners who are overeating and overcompensating in other ways. And so trying to find that healthy balance. And I think the other thing that's so important is, again, going back to that accountability. I mean, I feel like as betrayed partners, we need accountability too. It just looks different, mm-hmm. right? I need accountability that somebody knows my story enough to say, are you eating? Like, you don't look like you're doing great. Or are you sleeping, et cetera? That's accountability. That's people coming in and checking on you and making sure they're there. you know, one of the things we do, it's interesting. I remember having a partner say, Lachelle, you keep talking about grieving and how it's part of our self-care and like we should consider doing it. And she goes, I don't even know what you're saying to me. Like, I do not understand what you mean by grieving. And so we as a group ended up kind of collecting a list of ways to help ourselves grieve. Because again, so many of us live in a state of survival, or it's kind of that mentality of who's got time for this anyway? I'm not going to just stop and fall apart, you know, whatever. And so we started creating a list of ways to grieve. And so some women will create a playlist of music that stirs emotion for them. And they give themselves permission 10 minutes to listen to the playlist and stir and allow the emotions to stir so she can process them. Mm-hmm. I have another woman who created a habit where she had this particular blanket and she would lay the blanket out on the floor and she would sit on the blanket. And she knew that as long as she was on that blanket, that was space for her to grieve. But she wasn't going to be there forever, right? The playlist doesn't go on forever. And so being able to really say, this is important. And I need to do this, right? Crying in and of itself is us moving toxins out of our body.
Mm-hmm.
It's no different than us using the restroom. Like all of that has to happen. Our body is doing it because it needs it to go. And so the longer we fight it, the harder it is. And so it's always good to have some sense of self-care built in for your grief.
Yeah. So as we've only got a few minutes left, what are maybe some other needs? And then also, where can our listeners and viewers go to get more information about your resources that you offer for wives in this situation?
Sure. I would tell you that the last layer of the APSATS model is reconnecting and restoration. And it's not about reconnecting with others necessarily. It's about reconnecting with self and restoring things with self. So I mentioned that client at the beginning or the group member who said she was finally discovering herself.
Mm-hmm.
And those are places that you continue to seek out your needs, but you start to grow in a lot of confidence in that area. So, and we could talk more and more and more about it, but
I'm glad that you kind of closed the loop there because I think it's important for a betrayed partner to hear, hey, there's wholeness that can come out of this. You're not going to be fractured forever. There's healing that can close those wounds. There's healing that can kind of bring all the pieces back together. And I would say the way that Christ works, he brings those pieces back together in a way that is far stronger and better than they were before they were even fractured.
Yes. I see that every day in the work I do,
mm-hmm.
is women rising up and being stronger than they ever imagined of themselves. It's such a gift to be able to witness that. It really is an honor that the Lord lets me have.
Yeah. So Lachelle, this has been a great conversation and I really believe that it's going to help so many wives. And I actually believe it's going to help a lot of husbands that we're listening in too. where can our listeners and viewers go to learn more about you and what you offer?
Yeah. So you can find me kind of in two places actually. So I am a co-host on a podcast called Hope for Wives. And it's myself and two other women and we share our stories and speak to different topics that are really relevant to betrayed partners. Love those ladies and love what we do there. And then the organization that I represent is Hope Redefined. And you can find out more about us on hoperedefined.org. We run online support groups. We have professional coaches on our team. We do a retreat that we offer 2 times a year outside of Knoxville, Tennessee. And then we also have an online community. So we love being able to walk with women. And we also love being able to help women find the resources they need to keep healing.
Yeah, that's great. Well, Lachelle, as always, love what you guys are doing. And thanks for being on the program today.
You bet. Thanks, Jonathan.
Yeah. So again, listeners and viewers, we're going to post all of those links in our show notes so that you can get connected with Lachelle and all that she's doing. But we want to help you take your next best step to wholeness in Christ. So please reach out to us. And we look forward to seeing you back here again next time on the Pure Sex Radio program. Take care.
Pure Sex Radio is paid for by Be Broken Ministries. Visit us online at puresexradio.com.